CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, Delaney Consulting LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney's services as outstanding and excellent. The SAP Business by Design solution is a single integrated business management solution that delivers the best of SAP software on demand, offering the benefits of larger applications without the need for a costly IT infrastructure. And Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and other financial executives. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
And in this week's CFO Radio News, this month, CFO Magazine stated regarding the finance and tax impact. For many finance executives and corporate tax directors, the biggest headache when it comes to the state taxation is the issue of how income is apportioned among the various states. With many localities changing their rules in an attempt to replenish depleted revenue, such headaches are really starting to throb. In the most significant change in many years, as many as 18 states have moved or are moving from a 54-year-old income tax based model on a company's sales, payroll, and property to a model based solely on sales. While that should benefit corporate taxpayers in the headquarters state, it represents an overall loss in deductibility for the many corporations that generate income in a number of states. Further, as often happens in the crazy quilt system of state tax regulation, the states are adopting apportionment changes in a huge plethora of ways. That spells compliance burdens and added costs for corporations. Take the example of a particular communications media company with $500 million to $900 million in yearly revenue. The need to comply with varying state apportionment factors has resulted in the company having to pay taxes based on more than 100% of income, an official at the company said. While the official was not alone in expressing such woes, indeed about 16% of the 151 tax directors and finance executives responding to the 2011 CFO tax survey, they said apportionment and related issues were their biggest worry in terms of state taxation. And please see the upcoming April issue of CFO Magazine for survey results and coverage of other issues related to state tax. And moving on, we have our guest today is David Dahm. He is joining us today to discuss the role of the CFO. David, you are the CFO of LeasePlan USA, a leader in vehicle leasing and fleet management solutions. You were a CFO for 9 years with LeasePlan USA prior to becoming the CEO in 2000. Then in August 2008, you assumed the COO role. And then further, a year later, you As former chief operating officer and former chief executive officer, you made the decision to take on the role back again as CFO. An unusual move, but we'll hear a little bit later about that today, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Dave, let's start maybe at the very, very beginning. What was your education, and what led you to just even looking at the role of finance and accounting?
Well, Lorraine, I got my education back in Illinois where I grew up, and I got my Bachelor's of Science degree in accountancy at Northern Illinois University in the early 80s. Immediately after school, I took my CPA exam and passed it and was certified in the state of Illinois. I began my career with a company called Associates Commercial Corporation, and I came in as an internal auditor, and I spent 2 years as an internal auditor before getting involved in their fleet leasing division. And that's kind of where the breadth of my experience lies today. I've been in the leasing industry now for almost 30 years and mainly on the finance side. And I came up through the controllership ranks prior to me becoming CFO of the company.
Now, was that internal audit job your first job, or did you have a paper round or something like that earlier?
Oh, definitely. When I was growing up in high school and even grade school, I had paper routes. I think every kid started with a paper route. And I actually caddied at a golf club in Illinois for a good 5 years, and that's where I got my money to finance my college education.
Wow. So what did those early on, maybe temporary type positions teach you? Were there any lessons of learning for your career later on?
Well, I think when I was a caddy at the golf club, I first off enjoyed playing golf, and I realized back then, again, this was back in the 70s, that I surrounded myself with a lot of, I guess, well-off business people, and I really listened to what they were talking to each other on the golf course and really wanted to route my career through the business world, even though early on in my career I wanted to go into law enforcement. But business seemed to be where I wanted to go, and that's where I gravitated towards. And actually, when I took my first accounting course in high school, it kind of really grabbed me, and that's where it took off from there.
So the mathematical mind and the accounting, just you're drawn to it.
That's my passion. Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So you said 30 years within leasing industry, and you started with internal audit. Many of the guests that we have, the CFOs on the radio show, have either taken that controllership path. Many of them start in some kind of an audit capacity, and some of them start in a planning path. Clearly, you've taken the internal audit path. Is there anything particular that you could advise maybe the listeners that are the future CFOs of tomorrow listening, trying to make that same decision, that you might recommend as to which of those paths or maybe another, and how that benefited your career?
Well, I recall early on in my career, you had really two choices: either go into the public accounting route or into the private sector. And I chose the private sector because, again, I was leaning more towards general business with the accounting background as my entree into that. And that's why I went into internal accounting, because with Associates Commercial Corporation, I did a lot of traveling in the U.S., auditing their branches, and more auditing and compliance-related issues versus financial-related issues in terms of applying the right accounting methodology. So that's really what gravitated me in the business side. And then when an opportunity opened up in their leasing branch, I applied for it and was accepted. And that's where I really got to learn the leasing industry per se. But I learned it through the finance area.
Interestingly enough, a lot of our CFO guests mentioned that the internal audit function for them was a really great stepping stone for management. In fact, today, even still, although internal audit and the function has changed in a post-Sarbanes world, very often that is looked upon by management as a stepping stone to train and educate in the business. In a very quick, very broad way, you get to see and meet with senior executives, and that's a wonderful opportunity.
Absolutely is. And part of the internal audit experience I had is you got to see how the, I guess, most profitable branches of an organization or profitable divisions of an organization really operated. And you learned from that, and then you applied those lessons to the ones that weren't as profitable or didn't follow the internal rules that the corporation had set out. And that was primarily our functions, is to get those, I guess, weekly performing branches in line with some of the best practices in the industry. And again, part of my background is looking at processes also. And I'll probably talk a little bit more about that further on into the show.
Well, that's great. That's great. So then you move from internal audit and you are now in more of an operations role. Give us a little bit of an understanding of perhaps a broad spectrum of your career. I mentioned in the introduction that you've taken a slightly untraditional path. I'm learning it the more CFOs that I interview, and we're now more than a year into the radio show, that very often there is a non-traditional path for many of today's CFOs, and you certainly fit that mold. You progressed very quickly with depth and breadth in terms of the leasing area, and then you went on to be not only the CEO but the COO of the company, and then you took a different role back into the role that you had previously had as CFO. Talk to us a little bit about the various aspects of all of those roles and now maybe what that brings to you in today's role.
Great. Well, first off, I have to talk a little bit about the company I work for today to give you a general idea of my progression through the company. I have been with a company called LeasePlan USA, part of a large international fleet management company based in Europe, and we're headquartered here in Atlanta, Georgia, the U.S. operation. And I came into the company 23 years ago as a controller, It was a small company. We had about 40 employees at that time, and just kind of getting into the fleet management industry at that time. And as controller, I got involved in obviously all the day-to-day accounting activity and making sure the books were clean and the audits from our external auditors were done in a timely fashion. And I shortly thereafter got promoted to the CFO role. And one of the things that really discouraged me a little bit early on in my career was I wasn't involved in the commercial side of the business a whole lot. Never got involved in the industry activities with the manufacturers and some of our suppliers, or even with our fleet administrators that we deal with day in and day. I was really sticking to the financial aspects of the company. And a lot of my breath was in pricing and making sure we were pricing things correctly. At that time, in the early 90s, our strategy was growth. And we did get a lot of market. We gained a lot of market share in growth, but we had to price rather aggressively to get that market share. And one of the disappointing things that I saw was we didn't have a strategy to get to the returns that our shareholders wanted us to get to. And late in or early in 2000, part of our challenge was to bring those returns back to the business. We had market share. We had good growth through the 90s, but we didn't have the returns that our shareholders were looking for. And there were changes made, and it was at that point in time I became CEO of the company. So this was a huge learning experience for me, and one that I encourage any CFO to make sure they get involved in on the commercial side. So one of my learning objectives was to make sure I learned as much as I could on the commercial side and able to basically steer the business towards a profitable growth. We still were focused on growth, but it had to be profitable growth. I made a lot of changes to the management team at that time and realized that I had some good players that I hired that were bringing in the growth. So kind of talking about my career path there, I spent 8 years as CEO of the company and really got the company on a correct path. And one of the, I guess, things I'm most proud of is one of the gentlemen I hired early on in that in my tenure as CEO was really a great leader and also a phenomenal commercial person. And he came from outside the industry and was able to steer things around for me and for the company as a whole. And I knew had I worked for a person like that in the past when I was CFO, I probably would have never made the switch to CEO. So it was at that point in time I said, for the betterment of the company, again, this is where things get a little bit unusual because most people don't go from a CEO role back to a CFO role. I looked at it and said, you know, for the betterment of myself and for the betterment of the company, if he could be our CEO, I would love to get back to the CFO role. And in discussions with the board, we actually made that happen in late 2008. And from that point in time, you mentioned the COO role. I took an interim position because our CFO at that time, who I brought in, was an expat, and her contract was up, and she was going back to Europe. And today, she is the CFO of one of our largest operating companies in Europe. So the timing of all this couldn't have been better for not only myself, but for the company here in the U.S. And from that moment on, we took a different trajectory even further higher than where we were in the past. And it's been all good for LeasePlan. It's been all good for myself and for the employees of the company.
So how was that taking the broader leadership role to the finance role? Did you miss the commercial side? Did you miss the interaction with customers? Or today, are you still involved and interact with those customers and vendors?
Today, I am definitely involved with the customers and the vendors. And again, one of the things I mentioned in the past was I wasn't involved in that, and I wanted to make sure I didn't lose that connection. A couple of my colleagues refer to me as the most commercially astute CFO in the business. And there may be some validity to that statement because I have all the connections and the, and I don't want to say agreements, but basically the connections and the interfaces with our customers, with our vendors and all that. And what I bring to the finance team within LeasePlan today is the ability to make sure they understand the challenges that our commercial people are faced with. Again, go back in time. I was very black and white. If the pricing didn't equal a return of X, I would say no to it. Today, I'm very much able to accept that because I know the challenges of not only getting new business into the business is extremely difficult, but once you get it in, then you can work on improving the returns with the clients through various methods. And that's the kind of teaching I'm showing to the finance team here is let's get the business in first, and then we can improve on the returns. And I have all the confidence in the world today that on the commercial side, our team can do that and achieve those results, and we've seen that over the years. And that's why our returns are improving so dramatically today.
And Dave, you mentioned a little bit earlier your focus and passion for process. When we look at profitability, obviously in a poor economy that we've just gone through, cutting costs is a very key component of that bottom line. Yes, growth, whether it's through organic or acquisition-type activities, impacts your top line. But then throughout the financials, not only do you have the capability to streamline through negotiating and renegotiating your own cost structure, but then there's also the phenomenal opportunity to do things better, to streamline, to help your employee base understand how they can make their roles become more efficient. Is that truly the role of the CFO, or is the CFO sticking his or her nose in where it's not wanted to help improve that process?
Oh, I firmly believe it is the role of the CFO in today's environment. I think if you dial the clock back 20, 25 years ago, the CFO was really just kind of put in this box of they're the financial person. They make sure all the regulations are followed, internal controls are followed, and that was pretty much it. Today's CFO has to be engaged in the business, has to be part of the process reengineering of a business. I use our company as a great example. We are a financial company by nature. Our balance sheet is mainly all the leases we do with our clients. But we also do a lot of services for our clients. We don't produce anything. We don't manufacture the vehicle. We don't do the oil changes for the clients. But we provide and coordinate all that service for a fee. And it's our job to make sure that we coordinate that information and get that information in our clients' hands. We're in a very competitive industry, as I'm assuming most industries are very competitive today. So we do have to watch our costs. And part of watching our costs is to make sure our processes don't have any waste in it. So we've embraced the lean methodology over the past 5-6 years. We're looking at all our processes. We're re-engineering them where we can, and we're cutting out a lot of waste. Not only does that improve our overhead cost structure, but also from the interest margin line. Again, we don't manufacture the vehicles, but we buy the vehicles for our clients. We lease them to our clients. We sell them to our clients. We have to make sure we cut out in our processes any dead time where we have money out there and we're not earning interest on it. And that's so key because in the credit issues that we went through as an economy back in late 2008, it was an eye-opening experience because most companies couldn't get financing at that time. And we were fortunate enough because of our global treasury operations to continue to have financing on a very fluid basis. But it came at a cost, came at a very high cost. And we had to make sure that our clients understood that we were doing everything we could do to minimize those costs. And again, that had to do with efficiencies in our process and to make sure that we squeezed as much interest margin as we could for ourselves out of it while maintaining a reasonable spread to the client at that point in time.
Interestingly enough, Dave, you mentioned something there in terms of working with your employees and helping them further enhance the process and the part of the process that they're involved in. My experience is that what was in the, I guess, 70s and 80s called TQM and now is called Lean, and then there's Six Sigma. There are some broad brushstrokes that are all very similar among each of those. But one key element is education, re-education, reaffirmation. And once you've gone there, re-education and starting again. Do you find that there's a lot of time involved in helping and nurturing your employee base in that kind of an environment?
Absolutely is. And you're right. It's a re-education process that's continuous throughout the business. We've actually created a new culture in our business in terms of continuous improvement. And again, there's a lot of acronyms out there, but we followed the lean methodology, again, looking at waste in our processes and eliminating waste. And through our education and through our continuous improvement and keeping that out in front of our employees, we actually have people now volunteering to be part of the reengineering process, not only within their own small department, but at a broader base. And what we've seen is a tremendous amount of engagement in our employees. And what we do now is we require them, in order to be part of a process team, they have to come to the executive management team with a process they want to correct. And it doesn't have to be a major one. And what that does is gives them ownership in the process and really makes them think from a process mentality day in and day out. And that's where we've seen a phenomenal amount of improvement over the last 3 to 4 years in our business today. And it's just ongoing. It's part of our culture. So if I look back in time, two of the things we've done over the last 10 years was creating a culture of accountability. So if you see a problem, own the problem, solve the problem. And that's permeated through our business. And again, part of our new hire orientation process is to make sure any of our new hires coming in understand the accountability issue. And then the second one is the process issue. And we really celebrate the wins with the folks that do take on a process improvement and they show the benefit of that. We celebrate those wins and make them feel really important about it. And again, that permeates through the culture of the business.
That's wonderful. At the heart of employees is motivating each individual to their own personal passions and to be able to nurture that towards the company corporate goals. That's a phenomenal example of all of that.
Absolutely is. And that's why I keep going back to the fact that the traditional CFO years ago probably wouldn't have been involved in that level of detail. Today they are. And that's one of the things what makes LeasePlan so special today is that there's complete engagement from the entire executive management team. And we're not just kind of pigeoned in our own world of expertise. We have a very broad-based expertise within the business.
Well, talking about that expertise, let's talk about some of the complexities. One of the benefits of for the listeners of our radio show is that we have guests from lots of different industries, broad brushstrokes of some have had their own either focused narrow experience in one industry. Some of them have had broader experience over multiple industries. So let's talk a little bit about your industry. You've talked a little bit about the finance element of it and the interest impact. But are those the complexities of working in your industry, or is it more factors of economic times that are the complexities for your industry? What exactly is the complexity for your specific industry?
The complexity for the fleet management industry today is one of making sure we can take costs out of our clients' fleet portfolio. Again, we deal with commercial fleets of normally 50 units or more.
And by units, you mean trucks?
Trucks, cars mainly, light-duty trucks and cars mainly is where our expertise lies. So you've got sales vehicles, you've got executive vehicles, and then you have the service vehicles. Mainly service and sales vehicles are where the breadth of our activity comes from. So our job is to make sure we're the experts for the client and take costs out of their fleet. And we do that through a variety of ways. One is the maintenance of the vehicle and making sure they maintain them very well and that they run efficiently. Number two is driver safety and education. One of the biggest costs a fleet runs today is repairing the vehicles when a driver gets in an accident. Driver is usually taken out of the business for a while because they don't have the use of the car. We make sure that we manage the process of getting that car repaired. And we also do a lot of education for the driver. And we found that just educating the driver, making sure they're aware of their driving habits, has a direct correlation to the number or the lack of number of incidents they may have throughout any given year. And that's very key. And then we also work with our clients on fuel efficiency. Today with fuel, where it's going today, you know, clients are downsizing in the four-cylinder vehicles, more fuel efficient. Clients want to be green, so they're looking at hybrids, electrification of vehicles. So we're involved in all that. And that's kind of where our expertise lays. But again, as I mentioned before, we're in a very competitive industry. So we have to make sure we do it correctly. We provide a value to our clients. What feedback we get from our clients is that they enjoy working with LeasePlan because of our people and because of our reporting structures and all that. We provide data to them.
That's a very unique approach. There are very few companies that I know of that go into their customers' world, shall we say, and try and help them understand how to better their world.
Exactly. I mean, their world is, whether they be in manufacturer or pharmaceuticals, that's where their expertise is. Their expertise is not in managing a fleet. And that's where we bring them that expertise. We may deal with a fleet administrator in the business or somebody in procurement. It's kind of gravitating more towards procurement today. But that's what we deal with them on a basis. And we manage all that information. And again, our goal is to take costs out of their business. And that's what we do. We review on a quarterly basis, semi-annual basis with them, how much cost savings we've saved them in running their fleet.
That's fabulous. Very, very focused on the customer. Well, are there any, let's get back a little bit towards the finance and accounting. We're looking in a world today where you have U.S.-based operations, but that your parent and broader ownership structure of the company is global and international. We're looking at IFRS. And there's a little gap facing us out there that there are some proponents say that it will pass and some that say that it won't. But there's a lot of changes that actually have happened in the last 5-10 years in terms of accounting regulations. Are there any specific accounting regulations that are of particular interest to you at this time?
Absolutely. You're talking about convergence in terms of IASB and FASB. And a lot of that has to do with some of the issues with Enron and a few other corporations back about 10, 15 years ago. What's really of interest to me in our industry is the convergence on lease accounting. Today, there's a lot of activity going on in terms of bringing together one global standard in lease accounting. And what that means for our industry, and in particular for myself, is that the operating leases that we are used to having today in the States that are kept off balance sheet will be coming back on the balance sheet today.
So they'll be capitalized.
Absolutely. And what the rulemakers are working on, and again, just a little step back a little bit, U.S. GAAP is very rules-driven, where international standards are very principle-based. You know, so if you look at today's world in the U.S. and U.S. accounting standards, there's a set of rules that either qualifies a lease to be an operating lease versus a finance lease, on balance sheet versus off balance sheet. An operating lease today is kept off balance sheet. And if you go through a set of requirements, a set of rules, you can get that lease to come off balance sheet by just meeting those rules, very rules-based driven. So in our industry, a lot of our master or all of our master lease agreements are designed to meet those tests to keep those leases off balance sheet, when in substance, the lease is really a finance lease because the lessor does not take any risk in the residual. The true operating lease is where the lessor has residual risk, and it's really a right of use of the asset for the lessee. So the rules today are changing. They're converging, so there's one set of standards globally. There's no more footnote disclosure. There will be actually assets, capitalized assets, and liabilities on the balance sheet that disclose the leases. That's very near and dear to me because of the impact it has in our industry. I sit on the board of the American Automotive Leasing Association, and we have a very strong voice together with the Equipment Leasing Association, the rental association on where these lease standards are migrating to. We're pleased at some of the information we've seen. The exposure draft was just released back in August of this past year. However, there's been a lot of commentary on it, and the rulemakers are actually going back and relooking and are probably going to do another exposure draft again later on this year, because they've had made quite a few changes to the original exposure draft that came out.
Interestingly enough, my background is initially from the UK, and so having seen many international companies that derived from more of that principles-based, substance over form has been one of the key components of what was the UK and then became the colonized broad reach around the world for various different countries. And while there are those rules-based approaches, there's that overriding, but if the substance of the transaction is really X, don't treat it as Y. And I think one of the challenges as we go through this convergence and we go through what you might describe as a more broad standardization, so that, I mean, the intent really is you can look up a set of financials from any of the major corp companies in the world that do global business, and that you can start translating one with the other. And while I think at the heart of it, we all agree that that is a good thing, there's pain going from where you are today to where you need to be. And it sounds as if there's not only going to be that balance sheet impact for you from an asset base that, depending on the timing of when the lease occurs, could be a good or a bad thing. But clearly there's going to be assets and therefore there will be liabilities. But it's going to impact the P&L charge. And that's the big challenge that I think for many of the companies, for the heartache of the convergence.
That is absolutely correct. The biggest challenge right now is how the P&L is going to look like, where the initial costs of those leases, how it flows through the P&L. And that's where the standard makers are actually taking a step back and relooking at that. Their original proposal on the P&L was to go through interest and amortization, where today it's really just a rent expense of that lease. And that's got a fairly large impact on a lot of our lessees, especially in terms of some of their some of their covenants with the banks and all that. So they have to take a step back. And we've, as an industry, we've kind of pushed back. A lot of the lessees have pushed back and say, can they rethink how they're proposing the cost comes in a monthly basis? And that's one of the things they're looking at. But Lorraine, you hit the nail on the head earlier when you said the objective, the underlying objective, because we're in such a global economy, is when an investor is looking at a set of books that are in Germany versus a set in the UK versus a set in the US, the accounting rules are all the same. And that, you know, in terms of where I'm familiar with on the leasing side, all the leases, at least the obligations that the lessee has, are back on the balance sheet. And you don't have to comb through the footnotes and make certain determinations on what those obligations are. It's very transparent. And that's what the objectives of the rulemakers are trying to get to today.
What do you think the timing is? We're here in, beginning of the summer for 2011. And often there's a hiatus in terms of some, you know, summer breaks. Do you think that exposure draft will come out in 2011?
Well, the original exposure draft, when it came out in August of this past year, had set a timetable or inferred a timetable that they would come out in mid-2011 with the final version, and the implementation of these changes would be effective in 2013, and having to go back and restate 2012, which kind of told us as lessors that it's rather imminent, it's immediate. There was some pushback because there's a lot of clarity that still needed to have happen for not only the accounting firms to understand what they needed to do in terms of making sure their clients were compliant, but also from our standpoint as lessor, what reports we needed to prepare for our lessees to basically affect their accounting, to make certain accounting entries. With some of that pushback and with some of the uncertainty, they have recently signaled that it'll probably be later on this year before they have more clarity on the announcements. And it'll probably, the effective date will probably be sometime in 2015. So allowing a little more time, because lessees had to get ready for it. Lessors certainly had to get ready for it in terms of re-engineering some of their systems to produce the reports they needed. And we were asking for more time. And again, they had 780 comments that came back on the exposure draft, which I believe is rather significant.
Yeah, that is quite high. Unfortunately, in the finance community, we tend to put in place the rules that are implemented. We're not particularly good lobbyists or advocates. Well, let's look a little bit further in terms of some of these rules-based elements of the business. Dave, as CFOs of publicly traded companies, you do need to be compliant with SOX. Let's talk a little bit about you and your world and SOX. And has this now become routine, perhaps more in a broad brushstroke? Have internal controls now become routine?
Absolutely so. In my world with LeasePlan, we are a bank in Europe, so we fall under a lot of banking regulations. And as everyone knows, since 2008, banks are becoming more and more regulated. Internal controls, asset risk management, credit risk management are very key today in our environment. So we have a lot of oversight from the banking community, mainly the European community today, since we are European-based. It does flow into the States. So, yes, we look at operational risk, we look at credit risk, and asset risk. And all three of those areas fall under my area of expertise and responsibility. So, yes, we do put a lot of emphasis on internal controls, thus getting back to my earlier statement on processes, making sure our processes are key to not only take costs out, but they are the right processes from an internal control point of view.
Sure. Well, we're emerging through some tough economic times. You've alluded to cost and cost structure, and I would imagine that there perhaps are few in the world that are as keenly interested in interest cost and the financing cost, but also petroleum pricing for your industry is for your customer base is very, very key. Now, we're emerging, and some say we're emerging sooner. Some say we've still got a little bit of pain to go through here in the U.S. But many of the companies that you've, in your career, and certainly within LeasePlan, you've had a lot of growth. What is the CFO's role as it relates specifically to growth?
Well, today, the role that we play or that I play in terms of growth is making sure it is profitable growth and making sure we're utilizing our capital correctly. Again, what we went through, the crisis in 08, when the financial markets virtually collapsed worldwide, was something that none of us have experienced in our lifetime. And today it's a stark reality. So, you know, in terms of liquidity, you want to make sure you have ample sources of liquidity. So you want to make sure you're very diversified in terms of how you get your liquidity and your capital. So that's very important. The spreads have gone up since 2008, but the basic interest rates have gone down significantly. I mean, basically Fed funds rate are zero today. So the short-term interest rates are very, very low. Spreads are higher than what we used to see back prior to 2008, but the base rate's so low. So the clients are benefiting from a lower rate, but they realize the spreads they're paying today are higher and probably will remain higher going out. There's definitely spread realization now between a AAA credit versus a AA versus a single A, where prior to 08, those spreads were very minute from going from one credit grade to another. Today, they're not. So, you know, liquidity is a big issue today. You want to make sure you're very diversified and you want to make sure that clients understand that, you know, the ease of getting capital today just isn't what it used to be prior to 08.
Sure. Now, as we talk about that, is that the greatest challenge to the CFO, or does the CFO face a different significant challenge in his or her world?
I think in the world I live in the finance and in the leasing side, our biggest challenge is liquidity, making sure we have diversification in our liquidity. And I think a lot of companies are seeing that today.
Long gone are the days where you had one banker and you had a great relationship and you'd go meet with typically him and have lunch and they knew you, and it's not even personal today.
No, not anymore.
It's all paper.
Yes. Banks are very quick today to pull their lines away at the slightest, if there's the slightest instance of where you're having financial struggles and all that. They're not willing to work with you today. They're quick to pull the line. So you have to rebuild those relationships. What the key to that is the internal controls you have, your risk management capabilities and all that, the expertise you have in-house.
Well, Dave, this has been a fabulous time speaking with you. Before we let you go, we have a tradition on the show to ask your CFO tip of the month. What is yours?
I actually have two today, and I hope you don't mind if I bring up two. I always like to give a little bit extra. But my two today, and it just happens to be what we just finished discussing, is funding diversification, where I think in the past you may have had one or two sources of funding, whether it be asset-backed securitization or just a direct line with the banks. I think today it's very important you have multiple ways of getting financing. It's very key if you're a capital-intensive business. The other tip I'll give, and this is from my own personal experience, is make sure as a CFO you get involved on the commercial side of the business and understand that side of the business. You'll have a much better appreciation on some of the challenges that your commercial teams are up against in terms of bringing business into the corporation. And I think they would appreciate the fact that you as a CFO are engaged in helping them bring that business in.
Well, I was going to say that's a great tip. Those both are great tips and very much speak to the heart of the role of the CFO in helping manage the overriding business itself. Well, thank you very much, Dave. Thank you very much for being our guest on our radio show today and for sharing your innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO. Thanks go also to our contributor, CFO Magazine, can be found at www.cfo.com, and to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information about Delaney, go to DelaneyLLC.com. Thanks also go to SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small to medium sized companies. For more information, go to sap.com/SME. And thanks to Financial Executive International, the preeminent association for CFOs and finance executives. Their website can be found at financialexecutives.org. Well, this and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO and would like to be a guest on the show or know someone that may fit that mold, please contact us via the connection on the web. And thanks for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.